Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, everybody, here from Chicago and Barcelona. It's about 6 p.m. in the evening, and that's where we find our guest, Mr. Anthony Figueroa. He is the co-founder and CTO of one of the top AI companies in the Bay Area called Rootstrap. We've had Anthony on a number of times on previous podcasts. So, Anthony, welcome aboard, and thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Reddy.
And thank you for hosting me again.
Yeah, for people who may not have listened to the previous podcast, could you just kind of give a little bit of an introduction to yourself and about Rootstrap?
Cool.
Rootstrap is a company. We are a decade old, and we work mostly for fast growth companies, all of them in the USA, and we provide a lot of services, you know, from strategy, design, UX, UI design, engineering talent. We have a huge engineering team of about, you know, 250 people. We provide product guidance. We are specialized on machine learning, blockchain technologies, mobile development, you know, you name it. And we have been working with some of the top actors in the industry. And my role in the company, I'm the CTO, co-founder, and I kind of always looking for what's the next big thing, you know? And I get a lot of signals from the market, engaging in sales calls with very smart people. I try to be surrounded by very, very smart people. And one of the main things I'm real excited about is the blockchain. And it's kind of one of the topics of this podcast today.
Right. Okay. Well, without further ado, let's go ahead and get started. As you mentioned, in today's podcast, our main subject is going to be about smart contracts and blockchain. So let's go ahead then. There was a notorious phishing attack on the OpenSea, one of the most famous NFT marketplaces. Can you explain to me what happened?
Okay.
And so for those who are not very familiar with OpenSea, it's a marketplace, a decentralized marketplace where a lot of creators, they were able to monetize their collection. And it generated millions of revenue, and it is the most popular marketplace. And a few weeks ago, maybe 10 days ago, there was some, you know, a speculation around a glitch, and everything on OpenSea works based on a smart contract, which is some kind of code stored in a blockchain, which is public and you can see. And this code, it rules the exchange of different NFTs between people, basically. And some NFTs were lost to a malicious wallet. And some of these NFTs were sold, and this wallet was accumulating around 1.7 million in, you know, US dollars. And some very famous NFTs were stolen, included a Bored Ape NFT, which is very notorious. And initially it was thought that the problem was with OpenSea itself, and after that it became clear that it was a phishing attack. OpenSea was migrating their smart contract to a new version of the smart contract, which is a topic that I can go more in depth during this podcast. But what happened is that OpenSea sent an email to a lot of people saying, okay, you guys have to approve the new smart contract. You have to give this smart contract access to your wallet. And there was a malicious group or a malicious person that replicated the same email. And that email sent a lot of users to a different website, which was similar to OpenSea's website, and they granted access to their wallet to a different smart contract, which is now the new OpenSea smart contract. And that gave the hackers the ability to transfer these very, very valuable NFTs to their wallet. And that was what really happened. It was a phishing attack. And it all started with an email that was like identical to the official email that OpenSea was sending, but the link was, you know, wrong.
Okay. Now, what could have been done to prevent it? Obviously, you know, everybody's prone to a cyber attack, but what, maybe the better phrasing could be, what could have been done to mitigate the risk of this from happening in the first place?
It's hard to know, but, you know, there are some recommendations that are always valid, you know, like checking the origin of the email. Check if you have any warnings from your email provider for, you know, non-authenticated email. Check the link. Check that the link sends you to a legit website, in this case, OpenSea. And now it has another layer of complexity, you know. You have to be, if you have assets, especially if you have valuable assets, you have to be very careful about the smart contracts that you get access to your wallet. So I would say check the smart contract that you're giving access to. Double check that this is a smart contract associated with a service that you are willing to use. If you are technically savvy, read the code. I know that it's a lot, but, you know, all this ecosystem, it has a lot of benefits. It has a lot of things, but also it has a lot of points of failure. So you have to, if you have a lot at stake, you have to be very sure about what you are doing. And if you have a wallet that has a valuable collection of NFTs, you can easily lose everything because transactions are immutable.
Okay, excellent. Now, what are the weaknesses of smart contracts? So before you answer that, can you define for our audience what really is a smart contract?
A smart contract is implementation of a protocol stored in the blockchain. It has an address. You can see the code. You have to implement certain functions based on the protocol that we want to implement, and there are protocols for basically everything. But you have to really think about smart contracts. They're a piece of software, but they are not a product. They're more similar to a protocol. They're an implementation of a protocol, but they are a protocol themselves. And one characteristic of protocols is that they have to be highly secure. They have to be failure resistant. If you think about the internet building blocks, they should be free from unintended side effects as often as possible. If you think about HTTP, TCP, SSL, if you think about media protocols like WebSocket, HLS, you know, what we're really talking here when we're talking about smart contracts, we are talking about internet native value protocols. They are not communication protocols. They are not media protocols. They are value exchange protocols. And, you know, value protocols are coming, and you have to think about security implications of bugs and problems in internet native value protocols. And if you go a bit back, you know, and you analyze a bit internet protocols, you probably know about the Heartbleed bug, which was a serious vulnerability to OpenSSL, which is a cryptographic software library. And this weakness, you know, it allowed people to steal information that was supposed to be protected under normal circumstances. If you were encrypting all the communication using SSL TLS encryption. So this bug in this cryptographic library, it was a serious problem. It was discovered in 2014. It impacted a lot of people. And one takeaway from that vulnerability is that during, you know, 2013, the last year, before the vulnerability, there were about 30 contributors to, you know, the master branch of the library. And in 2019, you have 150 contributors. What that makes me think that, you know, creating a community is very important for key protocols, for key security protocols. And to me, it's clear for smart protocol developers, they have to start forming communities now. You know, it pays dividends. You need more eyes, you need more expertise, you need security experts, you need people to, working on that. And the second thing I think we have to keep in mind is that protocols change way slower than products, and they change slowly by design. So if you think about smart contracts as protocols, it's okay that they have to evolve slowly. That's by design. You won't have a smart contract changing over and over again because that's immutable. That's stored in the blockchain. And when you have to change your smart contract, that's a big deal. You know, that was one. It is what OpenSea is doing. You know, and it involves every single user granting access to a new smart contract, and each. And that's a big thing. So
to me,
we have to always remember smart contracts, they behave like protocols. They change slowly. They have to be very resilient to failures, and they need a community.
Excellent. Now, why are smart contracts so hard to update or patch?
Because
of the nature of how they are, how they operate. They are basically a piece of code stored in the blockchain. So let's think about OpenSea. Changes the smart contract required active acceptance of every single user moving to a new smart contract. Otherwise, you know, you are stuck with the old smart contract. That's part of the game. There are kind of some patterns possible to update smart contracts. Probably the most popular is called the proxy pattern. And basically you have one smart contract, which is called the proxy pattern. And that smart contract is stores the information to the latest deployed contract. And it can be convenient because you can deploy a new smart contract on the blockchain. And if you have special access to the proxy smart contract, you can point the new, it's just a passover, you know, you can point the proxy smart contract to a new, the new smart contract. The problem with that is that it's a new point of failure. If you have a malicious attack deploying a new smart contract and for some reason they they get access to point the proxy smart contract to the malicious smart contract, they can, people can make everything. They can get access to your funds, they can withdraw all your crypto, they can transfer all your NFTs. So again, it's not against failures.
Okay, excellent. Now, another recent incident is known as the Wormhole Bridge hack. Can you please explain to us what happened and how the magnitude of the problem was?
Yes.
It was a $320 million hack. And to explain a bit, a bridge is a way to connect two blockchains. On this case, Wormhole was connecting Solana and Ethereum. And just to be very clear, Vitalik, who is
the person
that started Ethereum, he thinks that bridges are vulnerable and in the long term they will cease to exist. But nowadays we have multiple bridges operating. And what happened here is that one person found a problem with the bridge. The actual problem is a bit complicated to explain easily, but he found a way to transfer
Ethereum
from Solana to the Ethereum blockchain by simulating the transfer. So at the end of the day, he found a bug in the Wormhole bridge code and used that bug to withdraw $320 million on Ethereum blockchain. And the most important fact here is how he discovered that problem. The problem was actually discovered by a developer who was working on Wormhole GitHub. And since this is an open repository, he documented the problem. He pushed fix for the problem, but in the time frame between, you know, the code being pushed to GitHub and the code getting to production, a hacker analyzed the problem and exploited the problem. And this is a big thing because, you know, you have developers in good faith acting to find security problems. And you have a gap between, you know, the time that the security is solved and the time that the solution goes to production. And that was exploited in this case.
Okay, excellent. Do you think this is an indicator of a larger problem?
I think it's an indicator that we are creating
an ecosystem
and it is being built as we move forward. A lot of things are being, it's hard to predict where this is going because changes are happening very, very fast. It's hard to anticipate technical complexities that arise every day. Yes, it has risks. Yes, I think it's worth it. I think that we have to understand that the blockchain and crypto are here to stay. I'm not saying that, you know, that they are better or worse. I like the technology. I think that it has a huge potential, but I think that the best word to describe this is unavoidable. You know, it's a technology that by nature is decentralized and it can't be shut down at this point. And everything else are technical problems and technical problems that we must solve to bring stability to the ecosystem. And I do think that a lot of problems, a lot of hacks are going to happen. A lot of vulnerabilities are going to be discovered. A lot of, you know, people trying to do their best are going to inject, you know, security problems on software. And a lot of people are going to have losses. But to me, at the end of the day, that's a technical problem. And that's something that we must solve.
Okay. Excellent. Now, what does the quote, code is law mean, and what are the implications of that?
Code is law is something you will hear a lot in the blockchain community. Because let's think about a smart contract. Contract is stored in the blockchain. It's immutable. Let's say that you have a business and you run part of your transactions through a smart contract. And let's say that let's put an example. And you have an insurance company. Your smart contract absorbs data from the outside world, analyzes how you drive, and the premium that you have to pay to your insurance depends on how well you drive. And maybe you find a loophole, you know, maybe not driving at all, or maybe you have a loophole, you find a loophole in the smart contract. And you are going to maximize your benefits. And that smart contract is immutable. So
code is law
mean that, okay, if you found a loophole, good for you, because that is a smart contract and that are the rules of the game. And this happened a few times. And sometimes, you know, you can end up finding problems and you can be exploiting problems, and what happens is people end up, you know,
failing
companies because they have a smart contract, they have a problem, and that brings you to a situation where you have to really, really think, analyze, audit everything that you store in the blockchain as a smart contract, because that's immutable. And if you have people giving access and interacting with your smart contract, they can find loopholes, you know? And another thing is that
this is so public,
this is so easy to audit, this is so... It's a fair game at the end of the day. So if you talk with blockchain maxis, with people that are fully committed to a blockchain movement, they think that, you know, that in the future we can have laws being replaced by smart contracts. Because if they have all the information that needs to be had, you know, you completely eliminate subjectivity. You have total objectivity. And that's another aspect of coded law, you know. If you can create and you can regulate part of your our lives with smart contracts that are well proven, that went through audits, that are being used and are succeeding, that bring total objectivity to transactions, to laws. And people believe that one day this will be the final authority. We can automate a lot of what today we decide on
the court,
you know. We decide with subjectivity. We decide with conflict.
Okay. Now, finally, this the incident is the remind. Is just another reminder of the risks that are associated with Web3. Could you think about some other risks that might be associated with it?
Yes. I think that there is two different ways to think about ownership. You can think about
self-custody
and a third-party custody. If you think about typically, you know, the banking system, you have all your assets probably in a bank account. That's a third-party custody. You are trusting on your bank, and also you are trusting on your country. You are trusting on your central bank. And if you think about what money is a way to move value across space and time. And if you go to the fundamentals, it doesn't have anything to do about, you know, authority and third-party custody. I think that self-custody matters, but it doesn't come without a price, you know. And the price is personal responsibility. We are not ready for that, in my opinion. Personal responsibility has to be elevated to a new level. Maybe your assets can be protected by a seed phrase, which is basically 12 words. And if you write these words in a piece of paper and
your keywords
are vulnerated, you can lose all your assets. You can lose, you know, all your life work because transactions are immutable. And this is a very powerful idea, which also brings a lot of risks. And I think that the solution to this, and this is very hard to predict, is a lot of education. As I said, I think in one way or the other, we don't know exactly how crypto is here to stay. Self-custody is a very powerful concept, which elevates personal responsibility. And I think that there is a phrase that summarizes a lot and that I like a lot. And the phrase is, there is nothing more powerful than an idea whose time has come. And
yes,
I think that it's I think this phrase is from Victor Hugo, and I think that crypto is an idea, you know, it's an idea and a way of moving responsibility from third parties to individuals, and it has a lot of risks, it has a lot of challenges, it has a lot of problems, but I really think that the time has come for us to,
work on that.
On those problems and solve them once and for all.
Okay. Well, Anthony, thank you for your time this morning. What is the best way for someone to get a hold of you in case they want to talk more about the smart contracts, Bitcoins, or the blockchain?
Yes, I can. My email is anthony@roostred.com. You guys can find me on LinkedIn, Anthony Figueroa. So any channel of communication, it's pretty, easy to reach out nowadays.
Okay. Well, Anthony, thank you so much, and we look forward to having you hopefully next month for another podcast.
Thank you, Robbie. Thank you.
Thank you for enjoy Barcelona.
Thank you.
Have a great time. Bye.